So I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Chris Castro, who was originally going to speak first in this session. Ted has to run for a flight out of LAX at 6. Wish him luck. And Chris will be getting a little more into the mesoscale meteorology and also future conditions. So we're very much looking forward to that. Please welcome Chris Castro. I should also note he's from the University of Arizona.
Okay. So thank you very much for having me to the symposium. And just someone was asking me about this slide when they came in and saw it over lunch, and they said, well, that's a really cool picture. And I think so, too. It is very illustrative of a couple of things. First is the highly mesoscale nature of the North American monsoon. You're realizing these precipitation on like the kilometer scale, and the severe weather effects are very impactful. So heavy rain, and you see that the outflows are kicking up a dust storm ahead of the outflow boundary of the thunderstorm. So this is really the observational scale at which monsoon severe weather impacts matter. So just this is an overarching theme of what I'm going to be talking about today. So this work was from a number of collaborators over a five-year project. I won't mention all the names here, but just a tremendous collaboration effort. So I want to talk about first, especially for those in the audience that might not be familiar with the monsoon, what are some severe weather hazards we experience, some basics of monsoon meteorology, and then we used a high-resolution modeling approach to address the climate change projection question. So I'll talk first about the changes in the large-scale atmospheric environment and then how those bear on extreme weather in convective permitting model simulations. And then some notes about information translation and concluding points. This project was funded by the Strategic Environmental Research and Development Program, or SERDEP, through their Research, Conservation, and Resiliency Program. So if you're not familiar with SERDEP, it's essentially the granting arm from the DOD for civilian-related research. Who was interested in this was primarily the U.S. Air Force for climate change impacts assessment to military facilities in the Southwest. So severe weather hazards, whether it is DOD or whether it is civilian purposes, is the concerns are precipitation amount, intensity, wind gusts from the outflow boundaries or microburst, the spatial location of storms, and the timing. So with some obvious concerns of dust storms, flash floods, microbursts, and lightning. So those of you that are from Arizona should well recognize this event, severe weather event. It's the Phoenix dust storm of July 5th, 2011. So this is such a dramatic event. It's almost like a picture out of a movie with a wall of dust almost a mile high. So we want to attack simulating these types of events using what we call a convective permitting modeling approach. And just to give you a range of scale of numerical modeling, global climate models are planetary waves and cyclones, regional climate models at 10 scales of tens of kilometers can get you down to at least good parameterization of the convection, but they do not give you a representation of the individual storm scale structures. To do that, you have to turn off the convective parameterization scheme, do what we call explicit representation of the convection in a convective permitting framework at less than 4 kilometer grid spacing. So we can look at, it can actually get to the storm scale structure. And then this is the paradigm that is used for modern numerical weather prediction by NOAA with the high-resolution rapid refresh model. So what are the prerequisite meteorological conditions for strong monsoon thunderstorms? First, we need atmospheric instability, which cools the atmosphere aloft and warms it from below. This facilitates the development of the vertically developed cumuliform clouds, and we characterize that by the metric of convective available potential energy. Then for atmospheric moisture, this, as has been talked about already, upper level moisture from easterly flow aloft, and there, Marty mentioned the moisture sources from the Chiricahua Gap. That's certainly true. You could add that here. I've put from the more traditional perception is that you get these surges of moisture from the Gulf of California. But at any rate, we characterize that via the column integrated precipitable water. So these are our two thermodynamic metrics of heat and moisture. So with favorable thermodynamic conditions, you can realize thunderstorms that occur in association with the diurnal mountain valley forcing. So they form over the mountains during the late morning and early afternoon. They reach a mature stage by about the afternoon, and then all else being equal, they rain themselves out by late afternoon. And this is just a picture over at Kitt Peak. This is about an hour west of where I live. Well, then we have to think about dynamics for the more severe type monsoon thunderstorm events. So this is involving monsoon ridge positioning, whether there is a presence of an upper level disturbance or a so-called transient inverted trough, which I'll talk about in just a minute. If there are surges of moisture up the Gulf of California, these conditions collectively lead to large-scale upward motion, vertical wind shear, which facilitates convective organization, and influxes of low-level moisture. So really the key to a key synoptic feature for severe weather events is the presence of a transient inverted trough. So these are large-scale dynamic features that travel along the southern side of the subtropical or monsoon ridge, going from east to west, and they destabilize the atmosphere and have favorable wind shear profiles on their western side to facilitate convective organization. So these are well known by weather forecasters in Arizona and the Southwest for diagnosing severe weather events. Then the process when you have the presence of an inverted trough is there's a convective organization and propagation process where the convective clouds form over the mountains in association with the diurnal mountain valley circulation. And then if there is the favorable dynamic and thermodynamic forcing, these storms can organize and then propagate west. If it's Mexico, towards the Gulf of California. If it's in Arizona, they propagate off the Mogollon Rim towards the Colorado River Valley. And their mode of organization is predominantly mesoscale convective systems. So we know from doing this in an operational forecasting mode, that we've done this at the University of Arizona for the last 10 years, operational forecasting at convective permitting grid spacing. We know that that grid spacing nominally less than 5 kilometers is necessary to represent this process in regional models. So if you're looking at projections of the monsoon from global climate models or even models at tens of kilometers, these pretty much fail, especially to represent this type of a process. So here is an example of a kind of banner severe weather event day where all of the conditions come together. So we have a transient inverted trough traveling around the southern side of the monsoon ridge. This is just an example from a North American monsoon experiment. And then we have low-level moisture surging up the Gulf of California. And then the passage of some easterly wave or tropical cyclone near the mouth of the Gulf of California that triggers the surge. And the result is you get thunderstorms that transition from the diurnally forced convection into MCS-type convection that propagates west off the mountains and in Arizona off the Mogollon Rim towards the low deserts in the Colorado River Valley. So what about that Phoenix dust storm? It is very exemplary of a well-organized mesoscale convective system. So you see the size of this thing. it's covering almost the whole western part of the state of Arizona. And just for meteorological reference, this was so large it created a mesoscale convective vortex that triggered convection on the on subsequent days into Southern California. And just to emphasize the point that we need convective permitting grid spacing, just as the results of just a cross-section of model-derived radar reflectivity with the wind vector scale. So it is really at this convective permitting grid spacing of less than 5 kilometers. It's a step change in the representation of the organized convective structures. And here you see some semblance of a salient MCS-type structure with the inflows and inflow and outflows at the leading edge, and then also the rear inflow and outflow jets associated in the trailing stratiform region. So what we did for the CERTIP project is we adapted a convective permitting regional modeling approach to the climate change extreme event question. So we're using a baseline of select CMIP 3 and 5 models. So these are the IPCC climate change projection models. Then we downscale those with a regional climate model, the weather research and forecasting model, to generate baseline long-term regional climate model simulations for historical and future periods. These are nominally at a grid spacing of tens of kilometers, 35 to 50 kilometers. Then we select what we call severe weather event days from this database of information, and then simulate just those days in the convective permitting type simulations at 2 and 2.5 kilometer resolution. And then at that scale, you can see you get some representation of these organized convective structures as you would see on radar imagery. And I would note at this step, we are downscaling the global reanalysis. So this is actually more important because we're looking at how changes have occurred historically over the past 60 years. So just when you downscale to the severe weather events, for irrespective of whatever modeling paradigm you're using, you get a similar climatological distribution of precipitation as compared to combined radar gauge observations here in the upper left, so downscaling reanalysis, and then also downscaling all of the climate change projection model paradigms. So what is the real difference using convective permitting modeling is in the timing of the peak convective rainfall. You get some sense of the propagation of convection using the high resolution model, whether as you use the coarse resolution model, all the convection happens basically in the middle of the day. Here you get some sense of propagation that is much more correspondent with the gauge radar-derived observations. And now the thermodynamic changes, so from the downscaled reanalysis, here's the changes in CAPE and precipitable water. So there's long-term modeled increases in atmospheric instability and precipitable water. We also observe this at the radiosonde data at these sites in the black dot. So this is a model result, but the changes are real. And these changes in other studies have been attributed to anthropogenic climate change. Now, dynamically, what we found is that this monsoon ridge has been expanding, and that's been causing these transient inverted troughs to be displaced further south of the southwest US. So in the present day, this is leading to less frequency of organized convective events in Arizona, but when they occur, they're now tending to be more intense because of the more favorable thermodynamic environment. So we're looking at evaluation of precipitation extremes in the tail of the distribution using standardized extreme value statistic type approaches. So looking at essentially separating out the changes in the tail from the rest of the lot of the distribution using a standard peak over threshold method and assessing statistical uncertainty. So here's the results for looking at the actual observed daily precipitation for Phoenix, Arizona. So this is the co-op data. So this is looking from 1950 to 1970 to 1990 to 2010, historical past versus the present day. And what you see is a broadening and flattening of the daily precipitation distribution in Phoenix. So you're realizing these more intense precipitation events now in the present day that were not in the record in 1950 to 1970. So a broadening and a flattening of the precipitation distribution, reflecting less frequent but more intense. So we've heard this before. When we did the model equivalent severe weather event simulations for downscaling the reanalysis, the model is biased low in its precipitation, but this character of the broadening and flattening of the distribution is very consistent with what we see from the observational record. Now, this is plotted significant changes in extreme precipitation. So just looking at the tail, top 10% of the distribution. So this is a gridded gauge-derived product from Ben Livna's group. It's kind of standard product that's used from reclamation, for example. So you see that in the gauge-derived observations over the last 50 to 70 versus 1990 to 2010, the largest increase in extremes is tending to occur more downwind here of the Mogollon Rim in this western Arizona, southwest low deserts here. When we look at the results from the convective permitting model simulations, it's keying in on exactly this same area, a downwind of the terrain where the precipitation does not occur that often, but when it does, is more likely to be due to intense organized mesoscale convective type system type events. Because it's a full physics model simulation, we can also look at other things. So one thing that is of very interest to DOD is the downdraft convective available potential energy, which is a proxy for the strength of microburst and by extension, the potential for dust storms like the July 5th Phoenix event. So we can extract the downdraft cape and then convert that to a downdraft wind velocity and then look at the changes over time. And here is the results from the historical simulation. And again, where those precipitation intensity increase is increasing, we're also getting an increase in the downdraft wind velocity. So this is hot, more intense microbursts and greater potential for dust storms. So I've used, because with the changes in the historical record were really so robust, what I think was a very nice result is then when we downscale looking into the future, the climate change projection models, the ensemble of the four models we considered as part of the study, just looking out in the next 20 years or so. So here's the changes in the mean. The mean precipitation is decreasing in from these ensembles. And then the extreme, but it's becoming more extreme, just as it has been in the observational record over the past 60 years and from the convective permitting model simulation, historical simulation. So the future projections just continue what we've already been experiencing over the past 60 years and as best as we know from the actual gauge data and the historical severe weather event simulations, and it just continues on in the future. And I think why is this, is all these climate models, yes, their dynamics are different, but really these changes are not so much dependent on dynamics. They're dependent on thermodynamics. And when thermodynamics take over and we're isolating that in the signal in the extreme events, this is actually where we have greater congruence in our results. So I think this is quite consistent with what has been said in earlier presentations. So then for impacts assessment purposes, we're trying to translate this information into, at the facility scale, in a way where we can look at changes in rain rate and duration and isolate those times where precipitation intensity or the precipitation is increasing with respect to duration. And this is just illustrating that the significant increases in precipitation intensity are really focused to this this short duration, high rain rate type of events in both the historical climate simulations and also in the future projections. So some concluding points. Long-term increases in moisture and instability that have been attributed to anthropogenic climate change by others. The more favorable thermodynamic environment is causing monsoon thunderstorms to be more extreme, though less frequent. And I think the most exciting result of our work is that we've identified Southwest Arizona as the local hotspot where storms are becoming more intense. And this is the more organized MCS type convection. And the climate, the future projections just show that continues on. And our ultimate purpose is to generate information at a spatial scale that's informative for decision making for, and that also conforms to the DOD weather watch and warning criteria. With that, I'll conclude.
Take some questions.
I'm wondering if the thermodynamic environment is more conducive to storms, why are they less frequent?
They're less frequent because of this. So that the other part of this is that the monsoon ridge has strengthened, and so these transient inverted troughs form in a zone of baroclinic and barotropic instability around the southern side of this ridge. If you're expanding that, you're decreasing the frequency of these things. But then when they do occur, the precipitation realized with them is more intense. So it's like bullets out of a gun. So you're shooting less bullets, but the bullets are more powerful. So I think what is very interesting to me is this paradigm of less frequent but more intense. We've heard it in many other applications. So the paradigm of hurricanes, maybe it also applies to atmospheric rivers and with respect to climate change projection. So I think that what we're finding for how monsoon thunderstorms in the Southwest is changing corresponds to this broader paradigm of how extreme events are changing on a global scale, I think is quite fascinating. Yes?
Yeah. Again, continue. I'm from Riverside County where we're still using that manual from 1976. So the thing here is showing that the height is getting wider, and that
right.
means that these storms are, I noticed on the later slide, they're more likely to go west into Riverside
well,
the, County.
This is giving you some indication of the frequency of the dynamic triggering. So that frequency is decreasing by virtue of the fact that this monsoon ridge is expanding. They still happen. But when they happen, they are triggering convection in a more thermodynamically favorable environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less frequent. But once you reach the point that the storms can transition into an organized mesoscale convective system, then at that point the thermodynamics take over.
So it could happen further west than it has
yes,
historically
and it's
in the past.
And it, so it happens further west because this is the area that is where rainfall is more accounted for by MCS-type convection, the organized convection.
there's in the last thing, so no, there could there be orographic effects that could overcome that in the West?
Yeah. There, I mean, I think the point I want to say is the more you're realizing this effect of increased precipitation intensity really tied to organized convective systems. So where those account climatologically for the most rainfall, that's where you're realizing the increases in monsoon precipitation intensity. Marty, did you have a question?
Yeah, just following up on that.
Hang on, let me give you the mic.
I think what I heard in the question may have been, will these MCSs or the convection push farther west into Southwest California, potentially?
Potentially, yes. I'm going out on a limb there, but I'm saying more work needs to be done to assess that question.
So I think I saw on one of the slides that mean precip in the future was expected to be decreased everywhere in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about this idea of the high expanding and
right.
decreasing the favorable dynamics. Is there any other reasons? Like in the White Mountains, the MCSs aren't very important for
right.
precip.
And that's
so
not,
why would
and,
it be
and
decreasing?
Even in the climate projections, that is not really where we're keying in on the changes. So it's the same area where the more intent the extremes are increasing that it's subject to more MCS type precipitation.
I was just wondering why like the Mogollon Rim White Mountain area would also have decreased mean precip in the future. Would it be like higher evap from the cloud base, or is there any different physical reason?
I think the best explanation is that monsoon ridge is expanded, but it's more intense. And because by virtue of the fact it is more intense, you have greater subsidence associated
okay.
with that ridge that's
right.
suppressing the rain. On average.
Hey, Chris, this is great. I just had a quick question about the GCMs that you chose. And if you could say a few words about why you chose them and to what extent they represent the full
right.
ensemble.
Right, so we chose these because, the CMIP-5 models here are what we are downscaling at the University of Arizona as part of the North American Cortex effort. So these data here are going into the North American Cortex archive. So we chose these particular models from the Cortex perspective because they're representing a range of climate sensitivity. So I could add the GFDL, which we didn't do as part of this work, but we also did GFDL as well. These previous CMIP-3 models were evaluated in a paper by Francina Dominguez to be relatively well-performing for the Southwest. We took the next generations of these models from CMIP-5, and that's how we did it. Had I wished we could do more models? Absolutely, but there was a computational resource constraint here.
Along those lines, Chris, I know that you showed a slide by Andres Prain as well, and that there's this approach of pseudo-global warming that's maybe well-suited to thermodynamic changes. Have you
correct.
Compared your results from the dynamical with
Just to be clear, both are dynamical downscaling approaches, but what we are doing is we are downscaling directly the output from these CMIP-5 models. So we're not doing any bias correction. We're not doing any pseudo-global warming type approach. The pseudo-global warming type approach would take downscale a reanalysis and like era interim, then add a delta to the boundary forcing to that model that is accounting for the average change from the ensemble of CMIP-5 model projections into the future. So you add the delta to the boundary forcing, but that pseudo-global warming simulation is preserving the natural climate variability that is present in the ERA interim data. That is very appealing for doing convective permitting modeling, because if you do assume that it is more thermodynamically driven, then the pseudo-global warming approach will likely capture those types of changes. What it will not do is, if we think there's different representations of changes in dynamics that are important within the realm of these CMIP models, the pseudo-global warming approach will not get that. So this question, for example, of like selecting the best models for atmospheric rivers, well, the pseudo-global warming approach is not going to give you insight into that kind of a question.
Do we have any other questions?
But that being said, I do applaud the work that they're doing there at NCAR. It's they've generated petabytes worth of data.
Do you actually know how it compares to what you have done at all?
What I can say is their simulations tend to have a wet bias in the monsoon, and then when they project the changes in extreme precipitation, they similarly project an increase in extreme precipitation, and I think that's even exaggerated in their simulations because they have a wet bias. So you're getting more of whatever you're going to get, and it's projecting onto the high bias of the precipitation in the climatology.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris.